Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Talking college football across nine states and 60 sticks. I appreciate the blessing of the Chuck Oliver Show. Our next guest, I've told you before, I've got a cell phone with a bunch of numbers in it. We could get a lot of people on if we want to talk handicapping, wagering, etc. Couple of things. First of all, he's not a paid customer, so he's got to do something to get on here. He's going to get everybody listening something at the end that's worth a couple of $100, so that's not nothing. Second thing, when we talk about wagering, handicapping, sports services, etc., you want to know who you're doing business with. How about 50 plus years, same family owned place, same family owned location? From Doc Sports Service, it's our good friend Robert Ferengo. Robert, been a minute. How you been, pal?
I am fantastic. Chuck, how are you doing?
Doing good. DOCSports.com. Tell everybody about Doc Sports Service and tell everybody how to get in touch with you. And then at the end, you'll throw them a little bone.
Sure. I mean, you said it. DOCSports.com. We have been in business for over 50 years. Family-run business out of Wisconsin. Probably the premier sports handicapping service in the country. We don't advertise as much to people. We don't have a sales team, any of that stuff. So that may be why you haven't heard from us. But we have the best team of handicappers, and we win a lot of money. So that's kind of what we do.
So Robert and I have talked before. Whatever sport you either coach, played, your whole, like, it's in your blood, your DNA, you really have a deeper level of understanding of what it takes to win and, you know, how to perform, et cetera. Well, Robert's background himself is hoops. And so college and NBA, he's the guy. Let's talk March Madness here. And I want to start with my alma mater, Auburn. It's a very popular conversation. Auburn got screwed. It's not just the seed. They're a four seed. It's the bracket. My gosh, at least get them out of the way of UConn. Tell me what you think about Auburn's chances to succeed, because that's all that matters. It doesn't matter if they got screwed. It just matters if they can win and push through.
It's funny. There's about five teams that I really think they really make me nervous in the entire bracket, and Auburn is one of them. When you look at their metrics, their advanced metrics, they're fantastic, right? Top 50 in defensive efficiency, offensive efficiency. They can beat you a lot of different ways. They are an elite defensive team defending inside the three-point line, and they also have that vintage Bruce Pearl offensive attitude where they'll bust off a 16-2 run kind of like they're not breaking a sweat. Really, right? So it looks like a really good team. They have some veterans. They bring their best guard. Katie Johnson comes off the bench. Here's the problem. Auburn didn't play anybody, and they didn't beat anybody in the non-conference. And if you look at even what they did in the SEC, Auburn has beaten exactly one team, one, ranked inside KenPom's top 25. That was Alabama, and that was at home. Even their best wins in the SEC are against, okay, you know, Florida's a good win, Mississippi State's a good win. These are tournament teams, but they have not proven at all, even close, that they can match up with the powerhouse teams, North Carolina, Purdue, Connecticut, stuff like that. So I think their seed is just about right, and they're going to have a chance to prove it. If they really are one of the best 16 teams in the country, they're going to get an opportunity to prove it.
Last year I was watching UConn, and I quickly learned, I believe it was Sanogo, he would get the ball at like the three-point line, and he would take one dribble, two steps, and I was like, he's getting to the rim, so you can get in his way, but like he's getting there. He's gone. They're better. Tell me, is UConn gettable? Is there a crack somewhere there? Because they look pretty dang complete.
Yeah, 100%. Look, I know that they are the most popular pick to win the national championship, but they're going up against history here, right? It's been almost 20 years since we had a repeat champion, and that Florida team was the best college basketball team I've ever seen. They brought back all five starters and their top seven players from the team that won the championship in 2006 to 2007. That's not Connecticut this year. They lost their best two players from last year's team. They only have four of their top eight guys. Now, look, I'm not saying this Connecticut team isn't great, but it's not the same team, right? Like Stephon Castle, one of their best players, he's a freshman. We don't know how he's going to perform under the lights. They're not a great shooting team. Cam Spencer is a great shooter, but they're not a great shooting team. But there's a reason that no one's won this tournament back-to-back years for almost 20 years. And the last time that the number one team in the country and the number one overall seed has won this tournament was 2012 with Kentucky. And the majority of those teams that won the national championship came back as a top three seed in the next tournament. Almost half of them didn't even make it out of the opening weekend. You look at Connecticut, I mean, they might have to run up against Florida Atlantic, which brought back every single player from last year's Final Four team. That might be who Connecticut has to face in the second round. The East region has 11 conference champions in it, by far the most of any region. I think the South has like six in it. So I'm not long on Connecticut. It's not that I don't love them. It's just that the NCAA tournament, it's the toughest tournament, the toughest championship to win for a reason.
All right, well, bounce around then. Give me two or three programs that you've looked at and the combination of they really can win this thing along with their odds. If you want a regional number, if you want the whole thing, I know you've told me you prefer game by games versus like maybe getting a ticket and wanting to go 6-0 sometimes, but just bounce around and give me some numbers that may be attractive.
Okay, great question, because it gives me the opportunity to tell you about some teams that I like while also giving probably the most important bit of information that I will pass on to your listeners right now. Do not bet on teams to win the national championship. Do not bet on teams to win their regions. Okay, this is where the sports books make all their money right now, on these futures tickets. They crush with these. And real quick, not to get too deep into the weeds with the math on this, but basically if you're picking, let's say, Houston to win the South, you're essentially betting a four-team money line parlay that Houston is going to win its next four games, right? Typical payout on a four-team parlay, if you just went up to the book right now and made it, is 11-1, all right? Houston is offering plus 150 to win the South right now. The odds are ridiculous. Even a team like Duke, who you think, hey, they offer a little bit of value here as the four seed, they're playing plus 450. That's worse odds than the 6-1 that you would get betting a three-team parlay. I cannot stress enough, do not make these types of futures bets in your betting over these next few weeks. They may seem like juicy payouts. They are not even close to good odds. Now, teams that I like, you're going to laugh. I know you're going to laugh at me, Chuck.
Say it.
I got my eye on Purdue, okay? Big Ten is a joke. Purdue lost, became the second number one seed to lose to a 16 last year. Couldn't even win its conference tournament. All right. I think that they have a favorable bracket where Gonzaga and Kansas are the two teams that they could potentially face in the Sweet 16. Kansas is all kinds of banged up.
Oh, absolutely.
And this is not a vintage Gonzaga team. I don't trust Tennessee on the bottom of this bracket. Rick Barnes couldn't even get to the Sweet 16 with Kevin Durant and DJ Augustin. Okay. Rick Barnes is nothing but a failure. So Purdue is one of those teams that if they get to the Final Four, if they survive that first weekend and build a little bit of momentum, there's no doubt that they're one of the top five teams. So I think that that's a team that no one is talking about right now that I could see definitely making a run.
All right, well, give me an individual game or two, because tomorrow I'm at this place called Harrah's, and they have live on-site wagering. So give me a little input for a couple of games tomorrow that if I want to walk to the window, maybe I may have some success with. Just give me an angle.
Okay, I will text you, my friend, when I finish all of my research on all of this week's game. But let me tell you this. You got to know who not to bet against. Two teams to not bet against right now are Alabama and Duke. Great system is that number four seeds off of a loss cover the spread at almost 81% in their first round games. Duke meets the qualifier that if that number four seed off a loss has a regular season winning percentage of 75% or higher, those teams cover at almost 90% of the time. Also, conference tournament number one seeds that did not win their conference tournament. That's your North Carolina, your Houston, your Purdue. Those teams, Tennessee, those teams are fantastic bets in the first round because they're a little angry that they didn't play well last weekend as the top seed. They're going to come out and not be messing around at all. If you're looking for upsets, and I know everybody is, don't get greedy looking for those first and second round underdogs. The majority of underdog straight up winners come in the second round. That's when you are going to get the juiciest odds. An average of two number one or number two seeds over the last 30 years do not survive the opening weekend of the tournament. Number two seeds in the second round have consistently been one of the worst producers against the spread in the NCAA tournament. So I know everybody's excited. They want to be the one that predicted, you know, that first underdog win, Oakland to beat Kentucky and all that. But be patient. It's a long weekend. There's a lot of action flying around.
And the reason he's saying, yeah, we're going to wait to the last minute, like you could get a Kansas number yesterday, and then the 6'7 senior who was their leading scorer, Bill Self said, yeah, he can't play. Or like Wagner, who we think has seven, and there's like maybe they only have six. So there can be a lot to change, and they tip it off tomorrow. Robert, tell everybody what they get for you coming on right now.
Listen, if you go to docsports.com, if you email in, if you call in, if you heard me, if you tell them that you heard me rapping with Chuck on the radio, we will give you 2 free weeks of any sport that you want. NCAA tournament picks, they're yours. If you want to get a jump on the MLB season coming up, 3 2-weeks of picks. NBA is your thing. You jump on it. But, Chuck, I will give you 1 free play and then another stat that's very, very important. I like Yale a little bit against your squad. I hate to say it, but I think I'm going to be taking those points against Auburn until Auburn proves it to me. And another very important betting stat: the team, the last 22 national champions, they have covered the spread in their opening round game 17 times. If one of those number one or number two seeds that you're looking at to win it all, if they do not cover their opening spread, get off of them. Connecticut last year, they went 6-0 against the spread. The eventual national champion has gone 105-27 against the spread in the last two tournaments. They cover 80% of the time. Okay? Think of the national champion as Ivan Drago. Whatever they hit, they destroy. You find that hot team, ride them all the way to the end.
There you go. And you mentioned baseball season coming up, man. That's the sport where the player gets the vig versus the house. Like, you give me a home plus 125, plus 130 dog in baseball, man, you can make a living at that stuff, Robert. I appreciate you coming on, friend. We'll talk to you soon.
Yep, best of luck. Thanks, Chuck.
Robert Ferengo, again, docsports.com, Doc Sports Service. Been in business since 71, I believe. Family owned up there, Wisconsin. And so Robert is their mostly their basketball guy, college and NBA is really his drill down specialty. And so this is his time of the year. All right, we're going to take a break. Continue next.
Now back to Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
Wednesday on the Chuck Oliver Show, talking college football, kind of what we do. The Caden Proctor transfer, these are very not relevant ideals for today's college-age folks that are being brought up. What about loyalty and what about team? How's that, you know me and team? These are not very relevant ideals for today's college age folks, but Caden Proctor and people in his age range, it's not, when I say not relevant, it hasn't been presented as relevant for a lot of these kids in their entire lifetime. There's always a lag. And while decisions of a 19-year-old, for instance, they still do reveal quite a bit about the kid. And Caden Proctor he's got some issues, his commitment and whatever else. And I mean, a lot of kids at, you know, 18, 19, when we talk about hard work and working through and head down and nose to the, all that stuff kind of does benefit you and the ability to do that. And I'm not saying this guarantees Caden Proctor doesn't have any of that. I'm saying that as a sort of broad brush generational thing, it has never been required of someone who's 19 and was a five-star recruit, good enough to get a scholarship from Alabama twice and Iowa once. I promise you that kid, it hadn't been a lifetime of people looking at him stern and going, now you need to follow through on your word. All right, we have standards, and if you don't live up to them, well, you'll just have to go somewhere else, Caden. I think it's been, Caden, what do we need to do to make sure you stay here with us? So, again, no judgment. I'm saying Caden's been taught this. So while his decisions still do reveal quite a bit, I think they mostly reveal things about us, people who are adults and who have taught Caden or tolerated Caden or gone along with Caden or whispered to Caden, hey, why don't you transfer back home? Or, hey, why don't you transfer back to Tuscaloosa? I think mostly who and what it reveals, things about us and what we don't really care about anymore, which is team and working through and all that other stuff. So the story is about him, and that's where a lot of the comments come. But believe me, it is bigger than that. Heath, how's the Wednesday going, man?
Well, since we're talking Caden Proctor, Chuck, there's a reason that could explain why he wanted to come back to Tuscaloosa that has not been fully explored. Are you familiar with the concept of fried Oreos, Chuck?
Oh, absolutely. I've seen fried Oreos dipped in chocolate Oreos. Yeah, it's one of the, it's fair food. It's good fair food.
Have you ever consumed a fried Oreo?
I have. Yeah, fried Oreo, fried Snickers bar, fried cheesecake, fried ice cream, fried butter. Yeah.
Well, Caden Proctor has also consumed fried Oreos. Specifically, it turns out there's an establishment called Jack Brown's there in Tuscaloosa. They got some locations around the southeast. But the one in Tuscaloosa apparently has a competition for who can put down the most fried Oreos. And according to a previous post on their social media, complete with a picture of him holding up his finger in victory, Caden Proctor smashed the competition with a certain number of fried Oreos. Would you care to take a stab at what apparently the sitting record is at Jack Brown's consumed by offensive lineman Caden Proctor of fried Oreos?
It's different than regular Oreos. And the milk's not quite the same advantage. I'm going to say, I'm going to say 24.
Well, you're overselling a little bit. 13, apparently, is the record, at least at Jack Brown's. But here's the thing. It is possible, we don't know what the factor was here, it is possible somebody came along, broke the record, got closer to 24, and so now Caden Proctor has to come back to Tuscaloosa to reestablish dominance. You can't rule out any possibility for why these kids make the choices that they make.
And I want to tell you something about when I was considering my number here, and I said it's more to it than just like traditional, garden variety Oreos. A fried Oreo, same thing as the fried Snickers bar or anything else. Have you had a fried unusual, like I've had fried butter. Do you know what fried butter is?
A nightmare is what it sounds like.
You have a kind of a frozen pat of butter. You put batter around it. You deep fry that thing, and it just turns into, as soon as you bite into the crispy fried outside, you have this deep fried butter inside that kind of, it's glorious. But the point is, the same thing as the Oreo or the pumpkin pie, whatever it is, you know, fried whatever, there's breading around it. And so it's not just, you know, a traditional Oreo. I bet he could put down a whole bag of those. When you add the breading around it and then the fried, it really does change it into a substantial thing. Each one becomes a big deal.
I've never consumed one, and I'm going to stay forever in my life on that particular item.
Don't live, Heath.
That's what I'm trying to do, which is why I'm not going to be eating
fried
Oreos.
Have you been to country fairs? You've lived in North Carolina, Georgia, Florida, and South Carolina. Tell me you've been to county fairs.
Oh, of course I have been, but that's okay. I had plenty of elephant ears when I was a kid. I don't eat any more fried Oreos. Plus, true story, when I was in high school, I have no idea why, but Richard Simmons came to our school to like force us all as kids to like work out with him and do his whole bit. And for the school paper, I got the privilege of interviewing Richard Simmons. And in full Richard Simmons voice, he gave me a lengthy lecture on how the stuff inside the Oreo is the worst thing you could ever put in your body. Oh, my God.
Did he tell you, Heath, I care about you?
He did not. He did not tell me he cared about me.
Just normally part of his is that I really care about you and I want good things for you. So he didn't make it like the Uber drill down personal thing. That's good.
No. He just wanted to emphasize that in the mind of Richard Simmons, Oreo stuff is very bad.
No, meanwhile, you go to a county fair or especially a state fair, anything coming out of the basket, I'm kind of up for it. It starts with the corn dog, but you go beyond that. I mean, you know what a funnel cake is, right? Redneck tried to make beignets. Like, I mean, you take it out of that fryer, I am so in. So, go ahead.
Okay, so also on the subject of Alabama offensive lineman who transferred to a Big Ten school, Seth McLaughlin, of course, transferred up to Ohio State. And yesterday, Ryan Day talked about McLaughlin and the issues he had with snapping at Alabama. He says, quote, "Seth's snaps have been great. I know that was maybe a little bit of a concern. I think that had a lot to do with maybe the cadence or whatever, but so far he's been doing great." So basically what Ryan Day is saying is the problem wasn't that this dude couldn't put snaps consistently where they needed to be. The problem was something in what Jalen Milroe was saying was causing him to be off target. And I'm not understanding how that works, Chuck. Like, if you have a missed cadence, then maybe you might snap the ball too early or snap it a little late. But I am not understanding what thing you could do in your cadence that involves snapping the ball at your ankles.
No, it may be a double clutch sort of thing is what he's referring to. But by the way, it's not a double clutch. I'm saying that's how you could kind of justify this. Like, oh, I would get thrown off by the cadence and I would double clutch and it would be low. I don't believe that's what happened. I think it was on the kid. I don't think it had anything to do with how Jalen Milroe talks, because they didn't look so super-duper down in Tampa that day. I mean, I don't know what the fumbled snaps were, but Jalen Milroe wasn't out there, and they were maybe as bad as they performed all season down there.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because this is the one deal. Like, if it turns out that in the games he goes Steve Sachs with the snaps again and they're just kind of going all over the place, every Buckeye fan is going to be able to scream, "You, how could you bring this guy in? You saw it in the title game, or you saw it in the playoffs. Everybody knew about this." So if you're Ryan Day, you have to almost sort of lay that groundwork of, well, yeah, no, we know about that, but this is what we think it really was. He better hope that he's not having to explain, well, maybe our quarterback's cadence is a little off too come fall. Otherwise, that's not going to be a real good look.
I might have gone Mackie Sasser. If you know, you know. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Continue next.
King of College.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
So, Robert, I want to thank you for your time. I just don't think you're the right person for this position.
I don't understand. Was it something I said?
Well, we did a background check on you and found some things of concern.
If you're in charge of hiring for your company, you know how helpful a background screening can be. That's why companies that use Horizon Background Screening make smarter hiring decisions. Don't let the wrong hire put your company at risk. Get the real story on your candidates at horizonscreening.com. Horizonscreening.com.
Football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
Wednesday, Chuck Oliver Show. Brian Kelly, we're on in Baton Rouge. We're on throughout the state, Louisiana. Boy, doing a big way out there, recruiting-wise. Old school, too. It's high school commitments from high school kids, a lot in-state, a lot throughout the South. LSU is a national program. They can get kids anywhere, including from Arizona State. But right now, LSU may have the number one ranked, depending on what service, you can go look at ESPN 300 or 247 or whoever ranks recruiting classes. And they may have the number one ranked recruiting class in all of college football for a year from now, class of 25. They have picked up another commitment. Offensive lineman Tyler Miller. He's out of Laurel, Mississippi. There are a lot of trees in Laurel. That's how people make their money over there. And Tyler Miller, big giant interior lineman. Now understand, they don't know where he's going to play, but in college, he'll be an interior lineman. He is 17 right now. He's 6'5", 315 pounds. And LSU looks at him, and we see guard. I don't know when this happened, but whatever. He has given his pledge to LSU. Now, again, big, giant, still growing, 17-year-old, and he's rated as the number one interior offensive lineman in the 2025 class. If you look now, you may look at On3, you may look at ESPN, just find somewhere. And if Tyler Miller's not one, he's two, not for tackles. And in high school, that's what he does. He's an offensive tackle, and he's a defensive tackle, and he plays on field goal block, and he gets like two a week because that's what happens when you're 6'5", 320, and you're playing in Laurel, Mississippi. All right? It looks like you wandered onto a middle school field by mistake. So that's what he does in high school. LSU looks at him and says, guard. So, the number one interior offensive lineman in the 25 class, do you know how good it is to be, I say Brian Kelly, it's really good to be Brian Kelly, but do you know how much better it is to be the LSU fan in Kenner? Do you know how much better it is to be in Metairie and you've got like your LSU flag on the front post? Do you know how much better it is to be that guy right now, that lady? Because Tyler Miller, number one ranked interior offensive lineman in all America for 25. He is your sixth highest rated commitment for next year. Now, disclaimer, and this is, I got to be wet blanket and all that. This is just, I try to be as very unemotional and just matter of fact here. These are only commitments. Until the kid signs, gets into school, is eligible, breaks the depth chart. Like, you got Hurd, the tackle. We got five-star tackle. Was it Lamar Hurd? We got five-star tackle, and he's in school now. Yeah, and my understanding is you paid him about $100,000 in name, image, likeness, and he was a freshman offensive lineman who played the same position as the guy who was just now a freshman offensive tackle who's now growing and the two tackles are great together. And so the kid wasn't going to play a whole lot. But he got $100,000, maybe. That's what I heard. $100,000 name, image, likeness, and after a year, he went to Tennessee. So you understand why I give you all these layers of disclaimer. Tyler Miller is the number one rated interior offensive lineman in the entire class. He's committed now, and he's sixth on your board. You got a quarterback who's the number one ranked player in the class. That's kind of cool. You've got a running back who is the number one player in the state of Louisiana. That's not nothing. You've got a wide receiver who is the number one ranked kid at his position in America and the number two in a state like Texas. Like, if you're the number, Harlan Berry, number one ranked player in Louisiana. You hear me say it all the time. Louisiana's a pretty good state for recruiting, folks. Big four, and then Louisiana, probably North Carolina in that order. But if you want to flip him, I'm fine. I'll roll with that. Harlan Berry's the number one ranked player in Louisiana, folks. That's something. Number two ranked player in Texas. Tell me more. That's where LSU sits currently with their class. They've got 11 commitments. And number one ranked interior lineman is not, I don't know if that's a thing. It's sort of an undeclared dumping ground for what, you know what normally doesn't happen? Normally, like a five-star guard. Like, how do you think about that? I've seen five-star centers. Who was it? Was it Clay Webb? I've seen five-star centers. I've seen five-star defensive linemen. Lamont Gilliard, I believe his name was. Gilliard, I'm trying to remember. The kid out of North Carolina that he got to Athens, and they're like, center. You see that sometimes. A five-star guard? I'm looking at you going, unless it's a wing T and you're generational, like, why are you playing guard, man? Because I'm going to line you up a tackle, and I'm going to run toss plays all night. Because you're just going to wash that entire – that's what I'm going to do. I've coached against Jeff Backus. You remember Jeff Backus? Guy went to Michigan and, like, started, I think, 4 years, and then was first-round draft pick of the Lions and went there and started for, you know, like, every game for his whole career, and then he was, like, after about a dozen years, yeah, okay, I'm done. That guy. When I say I coached against him, I coached defensive line for one high school. Jeff Backus played left tackle for the other. So, like, I really was responding. And I saw that. I was like, there's nothing we can do. There's nothing we can do. Like, I've got some X's and O's, but what's, you know. What are you going to X and O a high school sophomore to go against, like, you can't do anything about that. And so he plays tackle. What does he do when he gets to LSU? Maybe he's a guard. Guards come from somewhere, folks. In the NFL, do you know what? Now, there's been a renaissance, and actually, speaking of Michigan, I'll go Steve Hutchinson back in the day, like, really was kind of one of those guys who led this. Guard has become, fullbacks don't exist anymore. On a broad stroke, we can say fullbacks aren't really a thing anymore.
I think that's certainly fair, yes.
Yeah, so like Usyk, and there are a couple of them, but for the most part, they're not. Of positions we really have, guard was the last position to really get crazy paid in the NFL. The last position that really, because you know what guard was? A dumping spot for somebody who didn't have the feet to play tackle. It's why there always was an option. When Tony Mandarich, who you may not know, go Google Sports Illustrated Incredible Bulk. When Tony Mandarich couldn't play tackle, you know what he became that nobody ever talks about? Ever? Nobody talks about Mandarich, but he became a pretty good guard. Fast forward about, I don't know, 15 years, Robert Gallery was maybe the third overall or second overall pick, maybe?
Second to the Raiders, yeah.
Yeah, left tackle, but actually what he became? Pretty good guard. You've always had an option for a tackle. For an offensive lineman who didn't work out, there was always an option. And you know what it turns into? Not what you wanted with the top three pick, but it turns into a guy who's on your roster, and you go, all right, we'll give you a second contract. You get a starting guard for 6 or 7 years, I'll take it. You take a quarterback and it doesn't work out, you know what happens? There's nothing else you can do with him. Nothing. So I've seen even like big giant Mike Williams, not the one from Clemson, the one from USC. They were like, what about tight end? Andre Bruce was the first overall pick at linebacker. Got traded to the Raiders. The Raiders like, maybe you can be a tight end. You've got options for a lot of these things. And so guard, they come from somewhere. And tell Steve Hutchinson they came from tackle. That you're not athletic enough, we'll put you inside. It's a specialized thing now, but that's in college. In high school, if you're good enough to get a scholarship to LSU, you ain't playing guard in almost every case. Like I said, unless it's an offense where we're on the move, man, and it's counter tray and it's whatever. But in most cases, that's what it is. And they're putting together a recruiting class that as of March 20th, when all you can get is commitments, it's now you'd rather have them. But when all you can get is commitments, they're doing about the best you can and at the positions where you just don't find enough of those guys. And they're really boots on the beach, man. And this kid's from Mississippi, and I'd mentioned the kid they're trying to get the guard out of Mobile. Those are out of state. A lot of what I'm saying is in – and DeCorey Morse, Texas. A lot of this, though, every other kid, it's in-state. It's Shreveport. It's Metairie. It's New Iberia. I mean, it's in-state kids, and so Brian Kelly continued to roll along. All right, we're going to take a break, and we'll come back, wrap up next.
It's always college football time in the South. Now back to more of the King of College Football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
An opportunity, you know, Rocket's out there taking mental reps and learning, and it's an opportunity for that whole group to really kind of, you know, show what they're about. And you'll learn more once you get into the put pads on and you're into the pass protection and things like that, the other things that come along, you know, with being a running back.
Shane Beamer, who I'm a huge fan of, there is no more disjointed looking like roster. Not roster. Positionally, a disjointed looking depth chart than South Carolina. Chuck Oliver Show wrapping up on this Wednesday. And that was Shane Beamer talking about Rocket Sanders, who he's a running back, and you kind of get that. We've seen that. I am talking about Nick Harbor at wide receiver, who I think is actually supposed to be the starting edge, like maybe a two-point stance, maybe three, but he's supposed to be on the edge. Like, he might be the best pass rusher on the team. But part of the recruiting deal, we know what that was. I'm going to be a receiver. But first, I'm going to be a track guy, but then I'm going to be a receiver when I'm there. So he may be the best pass. Lenore Sellers, folks, I don't know. And they like him a lot. And he looks like a bigger, thicker, sort of athletic quarterback. But, I mean, he's the kind of guy that, I don't know, if this 30 years ago, he might be a defensive tackle. Like, he's just a unique-looking kid, and they have some big ideas. But that's the running back's room. That's what they're doing there. So, Chuck Oliver Show continues on this Friday. Excuse me, on this Wednesday. I had mentioned that we were talking State Fair, and I'm looking forward to being out there. We had mentioned the Oreo record that Caden Proctor has in Tuscaloosa at the local establishment there. Heath, what is the name of the restaurant again?
Jack Brown's is the
Jack Brown's, and there's a fried Oreo record, and he had it apparently. Maybe it's been broken since then, but I had guessed 24. We had someone chime in the Huntsville area, said the local record where he was 27. It's been since broken. It's now 29. So maybe, take some pride in your work, Caden. Maybe go back to work. I don't know.
Well, that's the thing. We for all we know, that's why he's come back from Iowa City is, hey, somebody took my title. I'm coming back.
And during the break, we were talking about just the general theme of fair food. And I mentioned one variety before. I admit most stuff at a county fair and certainly at a state fair, if it's coming out of that basket, I mean, it's a paper plate full of heart disease. I absolutely agree with it, but there's a couple of things at play here. First of all, you don't do that every day of the year. You do that when you're at the fair. And here's the other thing. You can't get deep-fried pumpkin pie anywhere else any other day of the year, almost certainly. And so you need to almost take advantage of it is really, like, I can't do that to myself. You're using the wrong verbiage. You need to take advantage of the opportunity while you can. Don't cheat yourself. If there's a fried Snickers to be had, there won't be one tomorrow. There's one here, right? So that's my advice, is gather a rosebud. In particular, there's one thing I want to specifically recommend. Now, this is not a very, I'll say, glamorous or sophisticated snack, but I've been at a QT before. I've been at a convenience store, and I see a bag of pork rinds, and I'll grab a bag, and it does what it's supposed to do. You know, it's just kind of a flavorful little something or other. If you've never had pork rinds coming right out of the basket at a county fair, it's a complete, and then they sprinkle the whatever that red kind of whatever that is. It's just fantastic, and it adheses to the grease, and it kind of just sears it right into it. If you've never eaten them warm, nay, hot, right out of the basket, it is a delight. Now, again, I know it's a deep-fried bounty, and I know about, you know, your jugular and all this other, and, you know, he's very concerned, and he runs 10Ks. I'm more concerned with the fact that the county fair is going to close tomorrow, and when can I get this again? So we have to reach some sort of understanding before we get out to Dallas on the Thursday and Friday before the Oklahoma-Texas game, Heath. That's all I'm saying here.
Well, see, but again, if I'm going to use my cholesterol options and whatnot in Texas, it's going to be, if we are in the greater Dallas area, it's going
turkey
to be
leg.
It's going to be on a particular sandwich at Heim Barbecue. It's going to be at places like Cadillac and Goldie's and Panther City over in Fort Worth. I will be eating during the SEC Media Days this year. We're there for 4 days, plus I imagine we get there Sunday since things start Monday morning, so in those 5 days, I will eat a minimum of 7 meals of barbecue because there's that many great barbecue places around. So if I'm going to use up the heavy-duty stuff, the heavy fuel, I'm going to use it on Texas barbecue, not on anything that came out of the fryer. But that's me. I don't begrudge, just not where I'm going.
I appreciate your lean, your bias towards, especially towards Texas barbecue, which is, of course, going to be mostly brisket. You know, if you're in Texas, hey, I want ribs. No, you want rib. Do you want a second rib? You probably just want rib if you're in Texas.
If you have to eat more than one beef rib, then you either better be the size of Caden Proctor or you better have not eaten in a week.
And you're not having a fried Oreo, so don't order ribs in Texas. They'll kind of look at you a little weird. I had mentioned earlier that we're about to go from five shows to 13 as far as the College Football Playoff Committee, what they're going to televise, because ESPN signed a contract yesterday, and the short version is until the structure changes, which could be any time, but $1.3 billion per season to the playoffs for all the games, all the rounds, the championship game, and then at the very end, it's always the details, all related televised content. So that includes the rankings release, which it's just a TV show. You have people like, you know, we have Adam Rittenberg on, right? We have him. He's college football. He does a great job. And I also saw him covering something in college basketball, like on site from Dayton, I think. So every, you know, Mike Greenberg, who Heath, you know about, I mean, because I don't pay as much attention as probably I should. He's still like, he's near the top, like Stephen A and then maybe Greeny at ESPN as far as high paid. Like, He's a superstar there, right?
Yeah, he's certainly in the top three or four. Okay. I don't know where he is versus Van Pelt on whose take home is more, but it's close.
Okay, and so like 5 years ago, do you know what he did? He did like that radio show slash TV show, and he didn't have to lift a finger very much after that, except for some specialty programs, some one-offs a couple of times throughout the year. Do you know what everybody at ESPN does right now? A whole lot of stuff. Everybody, and you know how you get everybody to say, oh, I'd love to do that? You either fire people like David Pollack, or word gets out that people who do still have their job took like a 40% pay cut. So you have people on staff to televise these things every Tuesday night, and you're trying to recoup $1.3 billion. And the fact that a year ago, I was talking about Duke earlier. They started the season 4-0, including beating the number 9 team in America and a Big Ten non-conference opponent. Folks, they would have been the playoff committee will start having meetings on Tuesdays following Labor Day in this exact situation. You would have had the committee the very next night paying attention to Duke. And if there were only four teams in the playoffs, we would have said, yeah, it's a little premature. Won't we give this a bit? When there are 12 and you've played exactly 60 minutes of football and it includes beating the number 9 team in America by 3 touchdowns, and there's 12 spots available, that's how you justify it. I told you, the real reason is because they got money to make up, and they have folks on staff who will say, yes, I would love to work that show. And it'll be at least 60 minutes, I can promise you. I don't know when the announcement comes, but it's coming. Heath, what's going on, man?
I sure hope if they're going to do that, if they're going to have rankings every week, I sure hope they will do the first at least 7 or 8 weeks of it just on a video conference, because the idea that you need to fly everybody every week to Texas, put them all in a ballroom and have them talk about things around a big table for a week in the middle, or for, you know, a whole weekend in the middle of September. That's ridiculous. There's no need for that. So
it goes from being an honor to be on that committee to being a chore almost.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. You have sitting ADs that are on that committee. They can't do that job if you're going to ask them basically to spend about 3 days every single week in Grapevine, Texas. So I would certainly hope you could handle that on the group chat or something. That seems a little much.
Do you remember, was it the Harris Interactive poll that came to prominence at some point, I don't know, past 15, 20 years? Did you ever look at the names who were, I was like...
My favorite on that was there was a guy who had been a quarterback at SMU who was upset because he said it was interfering with his fly fishing time.
Yeah, the Harris Interactive poll, it was almost like a greatest hits. Like when the SEC introduces their Legends class, and it's like from the 40s, from the 70s, like a little something, a coach, an AD, a play, a little something for everybody. That Harris Interactive, like that's who's going to wind up being on, like Jim Donnan will be on the committee, I promise you.
Yeah, hopefully they can come up with a better plan than that. Speaking of coming up with a better plan, Chuck, the folks at Sports Business Journal do a good job generally in assessing the business of sports, but they came up with their best sports cities for hosting events. And they had at number 2, Las Vegas. At number 3, Los Angeles. At number 4, Atlanta. At number 5, Indianapolis. Jerry World was at 6 and on down the list. Chuck, these folks claim the number 1 best place in America for hosting events, sports events, was Orlando. I have been to Orlando for college bowls before. These folks are out of their mind. They've never put the college football championship game in Orlando. They don't need to ever put the college football championship in Orlando. They've never had a Super Bowl there or a Final Four because they can't. They haven't had a major golf tournament there. They only have the regular golf tournament. Orlando, if you want to host your AAU event at Disney World, great idea. For anything more than that, stay away from Orlando. Let's hope the committee, whatever else they're doing, doesn't get that idea in their head.
I got to agree with you on that. And you're right. We used to go down there for spring training for the Braves. Did for 10 years. They built like a brand new stadium just for cheerleading. I was like, yep, absolutely do it. Anything more than that? A little much. David, Heath, me, I'll be back tomorrow.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.